Welcome to the Nobody Guide to Life, where we provide tips and tools for personal growth, personal development, and your spiritual journey that you can use right now in your everyday life. I'm J.A. Plosker. You can always find out more at japlosker.com. Thank you for joining us. So my listeners know that I love to talk about and practice mindfulness. I make mindfulness techniques a part of my daily life, and now I speak about that topic anywhere I can. So thinking back on my life now, I wish that those practices that have become so important to me now had been taught to me in school, that I could have had some help with the stresses and strains of growing up through the helpful techniques of mindfulness. Luckily for students of today's guest, they have that opportunity. James Butler has been teaching pre-K and kindergarten since 2002. In 2009, he volunteered to teach in Namibia and began using mindfulness techniques in classrooms as a way to help students cope with stress. Once back in the U.S., James made mindfulness practices part of his daily schedule, including mindful breathing exercises. James soon found the practices not only helped his students, but him as well. James founded Mindful Classrooms, an organization that travels across the country, educating schools about how to sustainably implement mindfulness into their daily routines, climate, and culture. James is now the social and emotional learning mindfulness specialist for the Austin Independent School District, working with teachers, staff, and administrators to bring mindfulness to students. He's also the author of Mindful Classrooms, Daily 5-Minute Practices to Support Social Emotional Learning, and the creator of Mindfulness in a Jar, 101 Exercises to Help Children Focus and Calm Their Minds. He's also the author of a coloring book for kids on social and emotional learning, and he's with us today. Welcome to the show, James.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I've been looking forward to this interview because, as I said in the introduction, mindfulness has become such a big part of my life. And it was due to personal struggles I had with depression and anxiety. And it was really something that I could hook onto and use. And it has really, really helped me. So I'm interested, with your background in all of this, what brought you to mindfulness practice?
My mindfulness practice actually started very similarly. I was struggling with PTSD, depression, anxiety, and really needed something to help me out, help me kind of get through. And it, you know, I was teaching kindergarten. Well, this was like after I got back from Namibia, but it was something kind of like clicked that my struggles were kind of seeping into the classroom, and I was like, "This isn't cool. Like, my 5 and 6 year olds don't need my stuff as well." You know, they have enough on their plates. And so I actually learned about mindfulness through therapy and then just started practicing, you know, using it in the classroom. It was for myself, really. And then I noticed that the kids were really getting into it. But it all stemmed from I needed support moving through and working through my own struggles with depression and anxiety.
How did you notice it? Because I think this is an important conversation for listeners. When you first started with mindfulness and you were so aware of the fact that you needed that tool, like I did too, mm-hmm. What were the first signs that you felt something in you was changing or shifting?
Yeah, I felt like I was able to see my students' problems in a totally different light. I was able to see to the root of the behavior and not the behavior itself. You know, whether it was, you know, a student like yelling at me or, you know, their classmate or occasionally things being thrown across the classroom.
Yeah.
To see what was causing the behavior and not just like, oh, you're not following the rules or whatever, you know. And I was able to be like, okay, are they hungry? Did they sleep well last night? Are they sad? Are they, you know, like what's really going on? And that was something that I felt like I paid attention to some, but oftentimes when I, you know, my own stuff kind of like, you know, made that pretty foggy and I wasn't able to see it all the time. And once I started practicing mindfulness, I was able to kind of like really see to the root of behavior and not take things personally like I used to, and really helped me connect with my students and their families on a much deeper level.
You know, that's really interesting. You actually took us down a road there that doesn't come up often in these discussions. Sometimes when we're talking about mindfulness, it's so much about what it does for us as individuals. And that's great. And that's so powerful. And it saved my life. It literally saved my life. But you took us down an interesting road there. From your perspective, one of your tells that mindfulness was working was how it made you see others. Now, that's a piece that isn't talked about very often. How did your students react to that? Did you ever notice an energy shift in the classroom, or did you notice a shift in your students as well as in yourself?
Most definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, just I was able to see others based on my own self-awareness, you know, just to be able to kind of like respond. And then I noticed as a result, because I was kind of modeling that and because we were practicing mindfulness more consistently, that they were also responding as opposed to reacting. They were naming their emotions. They were solving conflicts with one another, with little to no assistance from me as the teacher. There was definitely a shift, like a pretty seismic shift in my classroom that I'm going to be honest, I didn't fully expect, you know, like I was doing it for myself in the classroom. I was like, I really need this, like 5 minutes. I just, you know, it actually started, I found this really cheesy yoga YouTube video that we just did every day during our like morning routine.
Wow.
And, you know, it was like sun salutations for, you know, familiar with yoga with like downward dog and cobra. So like there's their 5 and 6 year olds when downward dog happens, like they start barking and, you know, cobra pose, there's hissing like snakes. And I'm sitting there just breathing, just like, just really getting centered. And, you know, I did it so the kids would like enjoy it. But then I noticed the shift in their behaviors and their just overall handling of their emotions. It was incredible. I was like, this stuff's magic.
Right. And, you know, James, it's really interesting when I talk about mindfulness, I do seminars on mindfulness, and people come up to me afterwards and they say that sometimes even just a simple tool that they hear in a seminar, even just a breathing technique that takes 30 seconds, it relieves pressure from their chest, or it calms anxiety. And I'm wondering if that's how it was for you. Is that something that you notice in your students as well? Because, you know, for me, it's usually adults, but do you notice that your students are actually telling you that it's helping them?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And when we, you know, I'm not full time in the classroom anymore, and I'm just full time as the mindfulness specialist. But when I was in the classroom and now working with teachers and staff, I hear the same thing with teachers. A perfect example is when, you know, when I was teaching pre-K, I had students that would come up to me and be like, Mr. Butler, my amygdala is going crazy. I need to do some mindful breathing. And they would sit down and they would start doing, you know, just focusing on their breath or using one of the tactile breathing exercises, like tracing like starfish, like tracing your finger and breathing, or fingertip breathing. They would sit down and they would do that, you know, or just stand and just do it in the moment and just focus on their breath for 30 seconds or a minute or so. But they were able to recognize what they needed in the moment. And they were able to say, like, I mean, these were 4 and 5 year olds. They were talking about their amygdala and their prefrontal cortex and their hippocampus and how, you know, what was happening. And like, that was huge for them to like feel that sense of empowerment. Meant to just like do the practice on their own without me having to say anything, because we did it consistently.
Right. And that's so much the key is with kids, especially, is creating new habits. One of my spiritual teachers said once, he said, a shift in one makes a shift in two. And so I think about that, you know, I have a daughter, and I always think about that when she's going through something. If I can find a way to become aware of, and it's really difficult, aware of and shift my internal state so that, like you said before so well, you see the behavior and you don't say that the behavior is the person. If you can see a person through a different lens like that in your own self, then that shift can create a shift in them as well. And I love that, because it sounds like that's what you're really trying to spearhead in your district.
Yes, for sure. And also just in teaching about going a little bit deeper into the brain, just that co-regulation, that when a student is escalated, that when we are able to stay calm, just our calm demeanor helps our students de-escalate. And just that alone, and teaching teachers and staff that, like, here are some tools and some, you know, some resources to use. But most importantly, no matter what's being said to you, no matter what's being done to you, stay calm, and that alone will help that situation.
Right, right. And sometimes kids just have to go through it. It's so hard to remember where we came from, right? Because sometimes we get frustrated. Get out of here. Go to your room. You know, we get frustrated. That's who we are as people. And we have to retrain ourselves to remember that when we were young, even now you hear, I just need to go through this. And kids are no different. Something I tell people, we have to become so not us. We have to step away from who we think we are, our ego, our frustrations, and give that child a space to just have an authentic moment of frustration. And that, just creating that space and letting them fill it, can drain the whole situation of its difficulties and negativities. I mean, is that something you've noticed in practice? Is that something that you've seen happen?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it goes, it's tied into just being comfortable with emotions and, like, naming emotions and not labeling emotions as good or bad. It's just allowing the emotions to happen, because I feel like, you know, for so long, I know I was taught, like, oh, it's not good to be angry. You know, you can't be angry. And then it turns into this, like, self-talk of when you get angry with yourself,
right?
Which creates this, like, vicious spiral, instead of just being, all right, I'm angry right now. What can I do to move through this? What can I do while I'm experiencing this emotion? Yeah. And how can I respond to it? And if we can teach our kids that, to just feel what you're feeling and to experience it and to give some tools to move through it if it's uncomfortable, but that it's not something that we should be like, oh, don't feel that way, or I shouldn't feel this way, because then it creates spirals upon spirals upon spirals that are then trickier to get out of.
That's exactly right. And then we see those patterns follow us into adulthood. And through my own personal practice, I'm starting, when I'm meditating, things will come up. I just, without even my awareness, sometimes I'm catching up to my unconscious as this is happening. But if I have something in my life that's bothering me and it's bringing up emotions in me, what I notice sometimes during my mindful meditation sessions is that I will start to link those emotions to something in my childhood. Mm-hmm. It just happens. It just happens out of my awareness. And it really does show you the power of being able to have someone there who will just hold space or let you go through something instead of imposing themselves on your situation. And, you know, as adults, we have to give boundaries. We have to give guidance, but we don't have to impose ourselves on kids. And it really changes the way you see the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how has it been received by other teachers? I know you're doing so much. In the introduction, we talked about you now being this mindfulness specialist, which I think is just absolutely amazing. How are the other teachers, just even in Austin and across the country, how are they reacting to this?
I mean, it's being received pretty well. There's definitely, you know, some pushback and some skepticism, but the way that I kind of share mindfulness with teachers specifically, because I was a classroom teacher, is that this is really, teaching is hard, stressful, and it's demanding. And this is a way to help us, you know, just kind of like deal with the everyday stressors in a much clearer and calm-minded way, and for us to be the best version of ourselves for our students, so that they can be the best version of themselves, you know, because how we move through the day totally impacts how our students move through the day. So just sharing this is like this. This is a tool for self-care. This is a tool for stress relief. This is a tool for empowerment. And also stressing, you don't have to, like, with regards to using it in the classroom, one, practice it on your own. Develop some type of personal practice. It doesn't have to be something crazy, like a 10-day silent retreat. You don't have to do that. But, like, play around with it. Download the Calm, download Stop Breathing, because both of those apps give their apps away for free to educators. You know, and just explore, and then, you know, use it in the classroom so you can empathize. But I think connecting to real teacher problems has helped with buy-in a lot. And there's, you know, there's going to be skepticism. There's always initiatives that come in through education, and it's just like, oh, here we go again. Now we have to do this. What are we going to do in 3 years? You know, what's the new thing going to be? And one of my main goals is to just get people to think of mindfulness as like the philosophy of education. This is how we are teaching. We are present. Right. We are being non-judgmental. This is how we are learning. We're in the moment. So really stressing, like, you don't have to add an extra 15 minutes to your day. Figure out, do you do morning meeting? Do a couple minutes of mindfulness during your morning meeting. Do you have struggle with transitions? Because oftentimes transition times, place to place, activity to activity, are hard. So incorporate a minute of mindfulness into the transition, or incorporate it as you're moving through the school. So just really trying to get teachers to think about it as like an integration, as opposed to like yet another thing to do with professional, with the classroom setting, but also at home as well.
Well, I think you bring up a really interesting point, and it's this. I think with parenting, even for those of us who aren't teachers, even parents who get so much advice from so many different areas, you know, I mean, you can't parent without getting advice. And you think, oh, here we go again. Here's something else to remember. Here's something else to do. And I love that you're bringing that thought process into school. It's not just another parenting trend. It's a way of being a parent that carries into your entire life. And it transcends religion, transcends any particular doctrine. It's ancient. And what we're doing is just tapping into a stream that's already flowing. And that's something that I think is important to let people know, especially in public school districts or when I'm speaking to social workers or people in religious groups. It's important to emphasize that all traditions at some level have practices of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And you can call it prayer. You can call it meditation. You can call it breath work, but it transcends labels. So I love what you're saying, because I think it's really an important message to overcome resistance. And yes. I think I love to hear how you're doing that.
Yeah, that is probably the biggest, or that's one of the biggest obstacles that I face, is people who hear the word mindfulness and they think meditation, and then they just think Eastern religion, and walls might go up and be like, oh, well, this is against my beliefs. And to stress, just like you said, that this transcends, you know, this transcends labels. This is about being. This is about just being in the moment. So this is probably one of the biggest obstacles that I face especially as a mindfulness specialist in a public school district in Texas. And I just name that, you know, I know that sometimes people hear the word mindfulness and they think religion, and we're trying to keep religion out of schools, you know, and I stress that, like, I think it's important to acknowledge that thousands of years ago, mindfulness has its roots in Hinduism, Buddhism, but that what we're doing is secular, and what we're doing is focused on science, and what we're doing is focused on, like, how this can help our students and our teachers move through the day and to learn, to maximize our learning potential and to maximize our relational potential, which everybody wants, you know, like, no matter your belief system, you want your kids to learn, you want your kids to, you know, to relate and to get along. And this is a tool that helps with that. So I really stress that. And we actually have a letter that we use in the district that kind of explains very basically what mindfulness is and how it's secular and some of the brain benefits and what it kind of looks like. And there's a blurb from our superintendent supporting mindfulness in schools, and we have it translated into like 6 different languages. And we really just we're proactive about that and using that letter so that if parents have concerns, we can talk about it, and it's more of like a proactive conversation instead of like a reactive conversation. Honoring where everybody's at, right. Listening, naming that, but kind of explaining how this does, this like transcends labels. This is for everyone.
Right, right. And that's its gift. And we could call it breath work.
Yeah.
It just, unfortunately, it has a label that's now associated with, well, fortunately for me, because I study comparative religion, but
yes.
Unfortunately for situations like what you're in, it's tied to eons of religious practice. But now, you know, science is showing us that the positive effects on health, lowering blood pressure, helping us groove new pathways in the brain, helping us to manage psychological symptoms and difficult emotions, that takes center stage. And it takes me to your books now and your products. So you're trying to bring this message of mindfulness to classrooms worldwide. Talk to me a little bit about Mindful Classrooms and Mindfulness in a Jar, which I think is fantastic. So tell me a little bit about those.
So Mindful Classrooms was born out of me teaching pre-K, and I was practicing mindfulness, but I wanted a little bit more structure. Tell me what to do, give me some ideas. And there's some curriculums out there that I looked up that I was kind of like taking bits and pieces, but I wanted something that was like very simple and kind of scripted and structured, that I didn't have to do a whole lot of research and planning, back planning, because like I said, teaching is hard. There's a lot to do. So I just wrote out, basically a 36-week guide to use mindfulness, focusing specifically on like stretching and breathing. And it was just like every day of an entire kind of traditional 36-week school year, here's a pose to do that incorporates movement and breath. And then here's a breathing exercise to do that also has a social and emotional learning kind of like aspect to it that can be used throughout the day, or just like as a conversation starter about empathy or self-compassion, or, you know, fair ways to play, you know, different things like that.
Right.
So it just started for like me and, and my colleague, or actually it was two other pre-K teachers. And it was just going to be the three of us using this, but the year before I had won Teacher of the Year for all of Austin ISD, wow, which was a huge honor and gave me a platform to speak about things and to kind of have a direct connection to the superintendent. So I shared what I wrote with him, and Dr. Cruz was like, let's pilot this in the district. And I was like, wait, what? This is just supposed to be for the three of us. So I trained 20 teachers on kind of how to use it. And then by the end of the year, it was being used by 400 teachers. And I was just kind of doing these weekly newsletters, and I just basically compiled all 36 weeks and, you know, did some tweaking and stuff like that, and put it into a book form. And then Free Spirit found it and they published it. It was really cool. Wow. So now it's being used throughout the country. And so it's like, I'm really focused on kind of like the 5 minutes, because like I said, like there's a lot going on in a teacher's day and teacher's planning. So to just be able to integrate, you know, 5 minutes into morning routine, or, you know, transitions, or start of class, end of class, you know, it's really, really focused on making it really easy and simple to use for teachers. Tried really hard to keep my teacher hat on.
I love that. That's my approach too. Is, you know, my whole thing is just simple. If you have 5 seconds, you can do this. If you have a pulse,
yes,
you can do this. Because I, you know, it gets so out there. Sometimes you go to these lectures and it's like, all right, look, folks. Uh-huh. It's like, do you have a pile of dishes in the sink?
Uh-huh. Yes,
do that. Just start with that. So I love that you're bringing that to the classroom. And what is this mindfulness in a jar concept? Is that the thing where you know, like you said, you could just pick out one quick thing they can do, right?
Yeah, you just pick out one quick thing. So when I was writing the Mindful Classrooms, I also kind of like wrote some kind of like mindful, I called them like mindful challenge cards or whatever. It's just like really simple practices that focused on stretching, breathing, listening, seeing, and eating, kind of like tapping into the senses. And Free Spirit asked me to kind of expand on that and to do the mindfulness in a jar. It started with 10, and then they were like, how about 100? I was like, all right. So it's 101 cards, and there's about 20 different really simple, like 1 to 2 to 3 minute practices that focus on stretching, breathing, listening, seeing, and eating. So there's different kind of themes, and different, you know, really like simple, easy to use mindfulness practices that you can just kind of use on the go, use during transitions, use as a start of the day or start of the class kind of routine. you know, so just, and again, just focusing on the simple and something that kids could do, kids could pick it out and they could read it and they could lead it. You know, because that student leadership component is also really powerful when it comes to mindfulness.
Yes. That I do what I teach it. Mm-hmm. And that's how we groove that habit in.
Totally.
I love that. So, James, what is a tip or tool that you can give us that can help us on our journeys of personal and spiritual growth? What's something you can share with us right now?
So I would say it's actually just a really simple breathing exercise that I recently learned about that has been super, super helpful with my anxiety.
Great.
And it's very simple. You just breathe in for a 4 count and then breathe out for an 8 count. And when you're breathing out for 8, because obviously you're only breathing in for 4. So you're like, how am I going to breathe out for 8? but if you breathe out through pursed lips, like you're blown out through a straw, that can kind of help elongate the exhale. And I just finished this, learned about this specific breathing practice, and I just finished a community yoga certification through Amala Foundation here in Austin. And learning about the nervous system, and when you double your exhale, actually like regulates your nervous system when you're feeling kind of like dysregulated, when you're feeling upregulated. And I use this, like, you know, I have a very genius name for it, 4-8 breathing. but anytime I use that, and if you do 5 of those, that's 1 minute. So it's just like, it helps me with like counting, and then to know that like, if I do 5 of these, I just took 1 minute to breathe. And, you know, it has been really, really helpful to help with my, you know, when I'm feeling like super anxious, or if I'm feeling really worked up about doing a presentation or whatever, I just stop and I take those 5 breaths, breathing in for 4, breathing out for 8. And it's been really, really transformative for me.
I think that's fantastic. That's perfect. I'll tell everybody as soon as you as soon as you finish with the podcast here, practice it immediately.
Yes.
I love that. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Nobody Guide to Life. James, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. And I want to remind our listeners, it's never too early to find a little more peace in your life. Look, we're living in stressful times now, and we should do whatever we can to help children reduce the destructive effects of anxiety, of depression. So a few simple exercises may have the ability to help center us, and we should do whatever it takes to ensure that children have these powerful coping skills. And who knows, maybe a few adults will even take the lesson to heart and change their lives as well. You can find out more about James's book, Mindful Classrooms, Daily 5-Minute Practices to Support Social Emotional Learning, and his product, Mindfulness in a Jar, at mindfulclassrooms.com. You can also find them at Amazon. Those links will be in our show notes. And he does have a coloring book out for kids. Head over to mindfulclassrooms.com. And you can always check out more at japlosker.com. Reach out to us on Instagram at japlosker. Or you can subscribe to the Nobody Guide to Life YouTube channel. If you liked what you heard on this episode, please consider sharing it with someone you know. Keep practicing and have a good week.